Today's Tuesday, March 10th, 2020, and this week on the Birdland BS podcast, one of the Ravens' all-time greats is ready to hang him up after a Hall of Fame career. That leaves some question marks for potential draft and free agent moves. The Terps lock up a share of the Big Ten title in this week's Shell and Tell segment, and the Orioles lose their heart and soul for the foreseeable future. Stay tuned.
So let's take it to the Birdland. That Baltimore home flavor is coming firsthand. Fred, Scott, and Ryan, tell them the word, man. Mixing a little BS to make it work, man. Sports, they got it. Want excitement, the topic. Make sure when they toss you the ball, you don't drop it. With all that swag, you're gonna listen regardless. Here comes the pitch, so it's time to get it started. It's Birdland BS.
BS, BS.
What's up, BSers?
What is up, peeps?
Fred, Scott, Brian, and James.
What is going on?
All in the house tonight. We got a full house.
At some point, we got to get James a mic. Yeah. Maybe we'll have to do that for next week.
We definitely need to make that happen for sure. We got a lot to talk about on this week's show. Obviously, some breaking news prior to the show today with one of the all-time greats for the Ravens deciding to hang it up.
Kind of first thing this morning, I woke up and it was already like, announcement coming from the Ravens. Okay. And then like, I think it was 8 o'clock they made the official announcement with an amazing tribute video.
Oh, yeah, man. There's no doubt. The Ravens social media account won the award for being the best social media account out of all the NFL teams. Yeah. And it's that video right there is evidence as to why. Well done. If you haven't seen it yet, go out there on Twitter, take a look at the tribute that they did to Yonda.
The way that that was done, I feel like they've known. Like, yeah. You don't throw that together overnight. I don't know, man.
These guys put together some things pretty quickly.
They do, but that was pretty damn good to be throwing that together overnight if you did that. Yeah, that's an award in itself.
Right. We're giving Marshall his due diligence with his own segment today, which obviously that retirement opens up some question marks for the Ravens and future moves. The NFL draft coming up, free agency coming up, that changes things a little bit. So we're going to dive into some of that.
And you and I are going to speculate in the Ravens Flock segment about some guys that we think we could see in the draft and maybe some guys that we think are flying under the radar that we might be able to get in the draft.
That's right. The Terps lock up a share of the Big Ten title, their first title since joining the Big Ten. Pretty exciting. That's a huge gorilla off of Mark Turgeon's back, as he says.
What, 17 years?
Yeah.
Since they've had a true title.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
I'm going
to
put true.
Took a couple weeks to get there, hoping they were locking it up a little sooner, but hey, it is what it is. We got it. And the Orioles, unfortunately, man, sounds like they're going to lose their heart and soul for the foreseeable future. No date plans. We're not going to speculate on anything.
I was going to go right to that. I was going to say, just for you fans that do get to make it to the O's segment, you know, we're not going to sit here and speculate. So if that's what you're thinking, we're going to speculate on what's happening. Nah. Not going to happen.
Not at all. But hey, before we get started, I know you guys aren't aware of this, and I do want to take a second. Brian, if you wouldn't mind, James, if you guys wouldn't mind grabbing some shots and coming up here. Up front to the main screen, out front of our beautiful downtown window here.
Yeah.
If you got, that's what mine coming
that
in.
That beautiful view of M&T Bank.
I don't think anybody else realized this, but this is something I was looking at a couple days ago, and I realized tomorrow is actually the official 3-year anniversary of Birdland BS since the first episode aired.
Wow.
Awesome. So wanted to thank James, you, for being a fan of ours since the very, very beginning. It's people like you as to why I do this and why Scott and I have done this. Scott, obviously, you've been a huge addition to this team and everything since we've done the video streams. It's been good. Brian, man, we don't realize how much we need you until you're not around. So we really appreciate you doing it. And, thank you guys for making my dream come true with this whole thing. This is it's been a fun road. It's been a good time. So I appreciate you guys being a part of it.
Cheers.
Cheers
to everybody.
Three more years.
Right. Let's go, buddy. Well, let's continue for those of you out there continuing to listen. We appreciate you guys each and every week.
Hog in the shower tonight.
Whoa,
that's a little far.
Ryan just took it a little bit too far there. But
with that said, though,
yeah,
I do want to remind you guys. If you've ever been injured at work or in an auto accident and need somebody who to call, 855-MD-CRASH, the Maryland personal injury attorneys that have your back. If you find yourself in that unfortunate situation, and I know I have, give our team MD-CRASH a call right away. We all know the cost of medical bills, lost wages, and pain and suffering can all add up quickly and potentially put you in a bad financial place. If you want a team that will handle your case, big or small, and just give you some peace of mind, save this number now. Put it in your phone. 855-MD-CRASH. That's 855-632-7274. Be sure to follow them on social media because they're going to be doing some cool giveaways to potentially the Orioles and some minor league games.
All right.
All right, Scott. So we got to talk, obviously, the big news around this team today. We've already kind of mentioned it a little bit. Marshall Yanda decides to retire. This was something that, you know, we were kind of back and forth on the fence whether he was going to give it one more go. Obviously, everybody in Raven Nation wanted to see Yanda come back for one more year after such an incredible year. 14-2, another Pro Bowl year. I mean, this guy is the epitome of consistency and excellence. It's sad, selfishly, it's sad to see this guy hanging up because he's had one hell of a career.
Well, it's not even just it's also the All-Pro, second team All-Pro again this year.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at his overall career, I mean, he is the level of consistency. He's the level of grit that you want you guys to really emulate. And the big thing to me, and they did a great job of it in the video, the tribute video, they said, you know, his grit and his toughness are so tough that the man walked off the field with a broken leg.
Yeah.
And he did. You know, and I thought that was a really great piece in there, and I think it goes unnoticed. That's how tough Marshall Yanda was.
Right.
He was set. He was ready to go every day and was willing to give it his all.
Yeah.
And then you think about the different pieces last year, especially, which is the whole reason I honestly thought he was going to come back. You and I both had speculations of whether he would or not. But last year, when Lamar goes to him and says, you want to go for it.
Yeah.
And he's like, hell yeah, let's go.
Right.
That's where I thought Marshall was going to come back. And I'm sad to see that he's not going to come back. I think we could have made another run this year with him under our belt. But I do have to say, I really hope, and I think they will, I hope the Ravens, maybe not this year, but next year, extend an open invitation to Marshall and say, anytime you want to come back and play, or anytime you want to come back and coach.
Yeah.
I think Marshall Yanda would make a great offensive lineman coach.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That goes without being said. I mean, look, though, he's 35 years old, right? He's going out on top. Did he win a Super Bowl? Did he go off in the sunset with a Super Bowl? No. I think that's why a lot of us want to see him come back, is make it that one last run. But at 35, the guy's got his health for the most part. You know, he's played a great career. In my opinion, he's a sure ballot Hall of Famer. I don't know if he's first ballot Hall of Famer, but he's absolutely a Hall of Famer nonetheless. The only reason I don't think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer is because typically guards don't get that kind of, you know, love. But when you look at the stats at this guy, you mentioned it already, 7-time All-Pro, 8-time Pro Bowler. The only other guards to do that are Larry Allen and Alan Faneca, like two of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And he goes right in there with that same class. You know, and he walks away, like I said, on top. He just was the anchor of the offensive line that led the NFL in rushing, broke the NFL rushing record last year. I mean, it's sad because, like I said, he's been the epitome of consistency, the model of excellence. He's been everything that you saw on social media today. If you haven't seen this yet on Twitter yet, I mean, the outpour of emotion from former teammates, current teammates, coaches, just anybody that's really come in contact with this guy over the years has nothing but glowing things to say about him.
I don't know the exact numbers, but the retweets on that video that the Ravens put out by players, I want to say there's a good portion of the offense and the defense that all retweeted that video.
Right.
Because Marshall is so well respected. And, you know, I think his respect comes garnered. There's a story that you and I were talking about beforehand when he was a rookie.
Yeah, so if you're going to make a mark with your team, right, as a rookie, typically rookie, especially back in his day with 2007, there was a lot of hazing and things that went around. Well, I'll tell you what, you want to avoid hazing. You want to get around that and earn your guys' respect.
Following Yanda's footsteps on this.
Listen to this story.
It was my rookie year. It was Samari Roll and C-Mac, and they had the little, I don't think it was a full taser. I think it was like a stun gun.
Yeah.
It didn't shoot out, but it had the two prongs, and they were offering up money to guys to take this this so-called taser. And it was my rookie year, and you know, and I mean, it was, I think it was like $600, you know, and it was cash, and I was like, hey, you know, this will be the easiest money I've ever made. So they heard that I would do it, so the whole team circled up in the locker room, and they shocked me, and I don't know if the batteries were dead, or I used to get shocked on the electric fence at the farm. I'm used to it. It wasn't bad at all. It's still probably the easiest $600 ever made to this day.
I'll tell you what, when I heard that story, I have been shocked by an electric fence, and I have been shocked by a taser.
By a taser?
Yes. In college, in order to carry a taser, you had to be hit with one. So for me, I know what he went through there, and he is absolutely right. Those electric fences, they ain't no joke. Those things put out 8,000-10,000 volts. Those tasers are about 5. So if he's used to 8 to 10, you can handle 5.
And you know the crazy part about it is, I don't think he alluded to it in the story that he just told. From what I've heard from other people is that not only did he do it once, but
he did it multiple times. He did it twice
because the first time go about it, the players were like, nah, you didn't have it against your body. You didn't do it right, or the taser malfunctioned or something. He was like, screw it, and did it again to himself. Dude, I mean, if you're going to leave a mark, that's just the kind of guy he was.
Can you imagine if as much as videos and social media are around now, even in the locker room, can you imagine if that were now?
Oh, man. Like,
I would love to see that video.
Yeah, I think it'd be hilarious. TikTok and everything else going on. Listen, Marshall, for me, he is everything that you want in an offensive lineman, right? In the trenches, you want that gritty guy that's going to go in there and put it all on the line, risk his body for everything. And he's done that since the day he walked into the locker room till the day that he's walking out of that locker room. I have the utmost respect for Marshall Yanda. Brian, do you have any, you know, memories or anything that you'd like to share about Marshall Yanda? Anything that you'd like to bring up?
Other than the fact that Scott's being called up by Joe Cardoso and wanting to be tased. I think we can start a GoFundMe for that one.
Go ahead. But raise some money for the show. Let's go. I'll get tased for money for the show.
All right, just put it out there to the BSers. Now, I just love the guy's just work ethic.
Yeah.
Just day in, day out, he showed up. And this past year, I think, was his best year I think he ever had. You really saw his leadership really shine through. And you saw it, especially the Seattle game, like Scott was saying earlier. When he came out there, he said, do you want to go for it? He's like, oh, I'm all for it. Let's do this damn thing. You never saw that type of energy ever from him under Joe Flacco's regime. And just to see how he was giddy like a schoolgirl, basically, was absolutely fantastic. And he will definitely be missed. And that's my favorite memory, was just that Seattle moment.
Yeah.
But will forever encapsulate that year and that moment for me.
And honestly, there was just something about this year. And I know it was collectively as a team, that everybody just seemed to be having more fun than I've ever seen Ravens team have. But him specifically, I mean, he stuck out like a sore thumb. You never saw him show much of emotion other than aggressiveness and being pissed off when somebody
attacked his quarterback.
Somebody's going after his quarterback, right. You never saw him just smiling and letting loose and having a good time. You saw a lot of that this year. I think, honestly, in my mind, I think he had this decision made
planned out,
prior to last year starting.
He just went out and said, I'm going to have fun this year.
And he gave it everything he had and just went out and enjoyed himself. Nothing but the most respect for Marshall. But obviously this brings up some question marks now, right? This changes things a little bit for the offseason and which way the Ravens go.
Well, I'm glad you kind of brought that up, because there's two main points when you're dealing with Marshall Yanda. You know, A, he's kind of one of the last few guys from the old regime, so to speak. So now all that's left, to your point when we were talking earlier, is the Wolfpack.
That's it.
So when you look at this, you know, all right.
Super Bowl team.
Yeah, from the Super Bowl team. You really have to look and say, okay, this team has, you know, has gone through a renaissance, so to speak, and really gotten younger. But the other thing that comes with Marshall stepping away is the fact that he is actually freeing up $7 million in cap space. So that's going to allow you, honestly, to do a little bit more in free agency than you originally planned.
Yeah.
You know, or we originally thought. Now you're sitting just over $40 million as far as your cap space.
Right.
So there, it brings, like you said, question marks around, and you free up that space. Do you spend that money and go, you know, maybe a little bit higher and try to trade up in the draft to get one of these top tier offensive linemen that can actually, you know, kind of, you know, from a guard standpoint, there's a few of them that you could transition to guard that could do a hell of a job.
Yeah.
But at the same time, do you spend that elsewhere in free agency to do the same exact thing?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the big question right now. First thing you do is you look internally, right? And what can you do internally? They drafted Ben Powers last year, and we didn't see a whole lot out of him last year, but he has a lot of the same attributes as a Marshall Yonan. I'm not saying he's going to come in and be a Marshall Yonan.
I was going to say, to Powers' defense a little bit, he did have a limited snap count. So yeah. We've seen a limited amount of work out of him and a limited body of work. So he could, he could take that next step over the offseason. We'll have to see. Only time's going to tell. But I think to your point, he's still a question mark right now.
Yeah, he's still a question mark, but you do have him. And then the other part was, we obviously saw Matt Skura go down last year with the injury, and Pat McCary stepped in pretty seamlessly and filled in his role. I thought maybe Skura might be expendable, where maybe you can use him as trade bait because you had McCary and you had the depth and all of that. But obviously losing Yonan now, that frees up a spot that maybe – because both Skura and McCary have played guard and center
right.
Throughout their careers, both professionally and at the collegiate level. So this, there is some flexibility with those two guys if you want to stay internal and you're not looking externally.
Let's be real, though. You're hoping there's flexibility between those two guys because of the fact that you still don't know if Skur is going to be ready when it comes to that.
The reports that are coming out is that he's healing better than anticipated, so he will be coming back. It's just a matter of when. It's, the process is a little bit slower.
You don't want to rush the timetable.
Right, but, there were question marks a few months ago that his career might be in jeopardy. That has kind of eased up a little bit. Sounds like he will be back. So you've got that option. And then another option that came up on social media today that I thought would be interesting was a former Raven, Kelechi Osemele. So Kelechi Osemele is out there. He's had some issues, to say the least, in New York. He hasn't been very happy since he's been there.
Is he in his fifth or sixth year? Or is he further along than that?
I think he's further along than that. He had at least 3 or 4
Brian,
years
can you
here.
Look up that?
That's what I'm doing right now.
But he'd be an interesting free agency pickup. He was obviously very good while he was here. He learned from Marshall Yonda. He was one of the ones that actually reached out on social media and sung his praise today. So he'd be a good fit potentially on the free agent market that maybe you go out there and you spend that money that you're freeing up on Marshall Yonda on a free agent like that. And obviously his familiarity with the system plays a big part. He's only 30 years old at this point, so he's still young enough that you could get a good solid 3 to 4 years out of this guy. And he was very productive when he was here.
Osemele is, it looks like they said he was drafted in 2012. So he started, so it's been 8 years in the league at this point.
Right.
So, okay.
Yes.
I was a little off. But.
So there's an option. And then obviously you've got the draft coming up. Does this change what the Ravens do early on in the draft? I don't know. I mean, obviously it puts offensive line a little bit more on the radar. We've talked about this before that we thought offensive line is something that you draft every year regardless of the depth spot that you have. But this puts at least offensive line a little bit further up the chain as far as importance goes.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, and that's why I said with the cap space, I haven't looked, and I'd have to look, later on after the show, what free agents there are, because you got to look, you can look at free agents, you can look at unrestricted free agents. I think next week they're going to actually be able to start conversations with those unrestricted free agents. So with him retiring, the one knock is I wish we would have had a little bit more, but I think if I'm being real, he gave some type of indication.
Right.
He just said, let me make the final decision when I'm here. This is what I'm thinking, but give me a few weeks to make the final decision. I'll let you know by, March 10th.
And that's another thing that you just got to respect the hell out of the guy for, was that he put the team first, right? Obviously he took his own time to decide on what he was going to do, but he did so in a way that didn't affect what the Ravens were going to do with the draft. It didn't affect what the Ravens were going to do with free agency. Gave the team enough time to figure out a replacement option. So, again, hat tip to, one of the greatest Ravens to ever suit up and wear the purple and black. Marshall Yonda, you will be missed. All right, Scott, it's time for this week's Brew of the Week. What are we drinking on that is an optical illusion?
Yeah, it's an optical illusion this week. This is from Liquid Hero Brewery, which is out of York, PA, not far up the road, about 35, 40 minutes up the road, depending on how fast you can drive. But this is their...
Real fast.
This is their...
Speed Demon.
Hey, all right. I can drive up there pretty quick. So this is their Irregardless IPA. It's their version of a West Coast IPA. So for me, when I taste this, you know, I get the citrus that you normally get with some type of IPA, right?
Yep.
But there's definitely like a tropical fruit undertone, like a mango or something along those lines. And it's the easiest way to describe this is actually for an IPA, I would describe it as creamy.
That's like, a weird word to use for
wow,
it.
Wow, never heard an IPA referred to as creamy.
He said it, not me, guys. That's on this guy.
Anyway.
Creamy.
You get what I'm saying.
No, I don't.
Did you mean dreamy, not creamy?
No.
I'm trying to help you out, man.
I don't understand where you're going with this at all.
Oh, my God. You two always turning stuff into a sexual innuendo.
No, hey,
sexual
innuendo. That was all you on that
hey,
one.
You said that creamy on your own. And dreamy. Let's go. But no, so this is actually, I think for an IPA, it's got a pretty good note to it. Like I said, the tropical fruit flavor kind of really levels and balances it out. You know, obviously make sure that you go over to Liquor Stop, pick up your beers, whatever you need for the weekends. But also make sure you mention Birdland BS, get you 10% off.
All right, Scott, now it's time for Raven's Flock. Not just Marshall Yanda, which obviously is sad.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk a little bit more about the Ravens and some of the things that this might impact. You know, now we're sitting about a little under a month and a half away from the NFL draft.
Yeah.
Like
I think it's 23rd of April, right? Somewhere around in there?
I believe so.
23rd through the
23rd, 24th, something like that, yeah. So obviously the Marshall Yanda thing plays a part in what the Ravens are going to do moving forward with the draft. Today, compensation picks
were
announced. And I know we had kind of talked about the Ravens potentially looking at probably 2 fourth-round compensation picks. But actually, they announced today the Ravens get a third and a fourth.
Big pickup there because nobody thought we were getting above a fourth.
That's huge. Third is 106th overall in the draft, and fourth is 143rd overall. And the benefit to this, obviously the Ravens have a good cluster of draft picks at this point. That gives them draft capital that now that compensation picks are tradable, which happened a couple years ago, that gives them the ability to potentially shift around and move up the draft board to really go after somebody that they want.
Yeah, well, and the other thing too, you know, I think this is honestly a pleasant surprise not only for us but for the Ravens, because when we talked, you know, a few weeks ago, we talked about DaCosta in some of his comments, and he referenced the idea of having, you know, 3 to 4 picks in the fourth round. Well, that was including the idea of the 2 compensation picks.
Right.
So now you move to 2 picks in the third round, two or three picks in the fourth round. Now you have more capital that, in all reality, if you wanted to trade up or you want to trade back, you have the ability and the flexibility to do that.
Right.
You know, more so, especially with that third round pick, that could come in handy if you're wanting to look into doing some type of trade with somebody. You could pick up, you know, you could release that third rounder and pick up somebody at wide receiver, or maybe it's on the offensive line. I don't think you're giving a third round pick for an offensive lineman unless he's a top tier guy. But in all reality, it just gives you more ability to do different things.
You know, and speaking of trades, right, I want to give credit to one of our friends of the show, Matt Stevens of the Raven Wire, which if you're not following him, go follow Matt Stevens on the Ravens Wire. He wrote an article this week that I thought was brilliant, and he talked a little bit about potential trade pieces that the Ravens had.
You were telling me about this.
He threw some names out there that I thought were kind of like, I don't know about trading that guy, but the scenarios that he built around each one of them were pretty good. So I kind of wanted to get your take and my take on a few of these guys and see what options the Ravens might have now. And one of the guys that I think a lot of people were talking about in the chat room already, a lot of people are talking about social media, is now RG3.
Yeah.
Right? So obviously RG3 was signed again last year as an insurance policy because they really didn't know 100%. They didn't know what they were going to have.
Season with Lamar.
Exactly. With Lamar, with this new offense, all of that. They drafted Trace McSorley. They got him late in like the 6th round last year, so you didn't know what to expect of him as a potential backup to Lamar. Well, now you know. Now you know what to expect with Lamar. Now you know what to expect with this offense. Now you know what Trace McSorley brings to this team. Does RG3 become more expendable? In my opinion, he does, because he's very attractive for another team. And then hear me out, right? So he's only going to cost another team $2 million, which for a quarterback in this league is like robbing, you know, a Swiss, you know, it's so cheap.
Yeah. Yeah.
A Salvation Army. I mean, it's like the dumpster dive.
It's an upgraded Salvation Army, but yeah.
And he could potentially be a diamond in the rough for a team, right? Because he's shown flashes of being good when he's gotten opportunities with us.
But he's got to be, you know, to that point, when it comes to RG3, it's got to be the right scheme for somebody. You have to have a scheme that's built around what he can do. And he obviously, he's got a decent arm. He's got good legs. You know, I'll call them average to above average legs. But the problem is the injury history.
Yeah.
Right? That's what somebody is going to discount him for. And why, you know, a starting quarterback, $2 million, that's a hell of a steal. But at the same time, is somebody willing to take that risk with 100%.
It's not much of a risk. That's what I'm saying. At $2 million, there is no risk with it, right? So, and if you're the Ravens right now, you just had a guy like Marshall Yanda retire, right? If you've got a piece expendable like an RG3, do you go out and put RG3 out there for a potential guard replacement for Marshall Yanda? If you've got a team that might be a little heavy on, you know, offensive line depth, or maybe another team that's trying to dump a little bit of salary on offensive line and needs the help at quarterback, maybe they make that deal for RG3. So he was an interesting need. I mean, an interesting name.
He's definitely, I think there is some validity to the argument. My only issue is if you take him out of the picture and Lamar gets hurt, now you're dealing with Trace. And right. No offense to Trace by any means. He's just not as plug and play ready as an RG3 would be.
No,
and which is a great risk to the Ravens at that point.
That's the risk, right? The risk is on the Ravens, whether or not they're willing to give up their insurance policy, right? Because Trace McSorley, again, in the preseason, he showed a little bit of flash, especially towards the end of the preseason when he started getting a little bit more comfortable in the offense. But you don't really know what you got in him until he's out there playing with the ones, right? And we haven't been subjected to that because we haven't been there for practices and everything. No. We saw early on in training camp, but that was about it. So you don't really know what you got. You know what you have in RG3. RG3 had experience. He got out there in multiple quarters last year when, you know, games were out of hand, got the, you know, kind of knocked the rust off a little bit and showed teams what he could do.
Well, and that other undervalued piece with RG3 that you can't value in a trade, in my opinion, is the mentorship that he's provided. I don't know. None of us know, except for Lamar and RG3, what type of role RG3 has played in the development of Lamar. I don't know. I can't say. But I do think that as much as I've seen them on the sidelines talking to each other during games when they're showing them, I have a feeling it's a pretty strong bond between the two of them.
It absolutely is.
So I think there is an undervalued tone there that says, well, wait a second. How much is his mentorship helping Lamar to progress? I think not taken away from Lamar's own progression. I think he's done that on his own. But I do think RG3 being able to go in, and unfortunately, I can't say it any other way, being able to go to Lamar and say, here's how not to do it, I think it helps.
And it has, but I think the most crucial time for RG3 as a mentor to Lamar is now past, right?
You think it was last year?
It was that first year, that first full year, kind of let him get out there, learn, you know, on the job per se, and have RG3 in his ear all year long. Hey, this is where I messed up last year. This is what you should be doing. Get down in this situation. Get out of bounds in this situation. Those things, I think, were crucial to Lamar's development and are crucial to his longevity as a quarterback in this league. But RG3 is at the point of his career now where if he's going to be a starter at any point from here on out in his career, he needs to make a name for himself again. Yeah. Now,
disclaimer, I'm just playing devil's advocate. No, I agree with you 100%. I mean, I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here and say, you know, what kind of role he's playing. But I think you're absolutely right. I think there is some validity to him being trade bait. And in all honesty, not only is somebody only having to pay him $2 million, but the Ravens could get some serious compensation for that moving forward because of his value and what he would bring to a team.
Right. And the other names that our buddy Matt mentioned in this trade, potential pieces that could be moved, couple that we've already covered, Matt Judon in the potential franchise tag and trade, which the franchise tag deadline was pushed back until March 16th, my birthday.
Was originally today.
Right.
Was originally today at 4.
So it was pushed back, gives the Ravens a little bit more time to figure out and negotiate what they're going to do. Obviously, the Ravens have probably already made their mind up as to which way they're going to go.
Yeah.
But that moves that back. So do the Ravens tag and trade him? We'll still see. We pitched the scenario of potentially trading, tagging and trading Judon. The Jaguars tagging and trading Yannick, trading those guys, and potentially another piece that could be involved. This, let's make it a mega deal, Scott. Let's get crazy, right? Let's get
we're
stupid.
Like Oprah over here. Let's give it away.
Let's get crazy. Let's do a Jaguars deal for Matt Judon, Hayden Hurst, because both of them, they need both, right?
Okay.
We get Yannick and we get some draft capital back. Hayden Hurst gets to go to an offense where he's featured more as a tight end number one. Judon gets to go get paid a mega deal somewhere down in Jacksonville. We get that exciting pass rusher that we want in Yannick, and we add more draft capital. I think it's a win-win.
Can we get Eric DaCosta on the line? I think we need...
Here is your GM of the year.
Yeah,
right there. No, there's your GM of the year.
Nah, just let's. that's like one of those Madden type deals, right? Like, I don't know if this is gonna go through, but I'm gonna force it to go through. Either way, I like it too much.
That's not even a Madden type deal. That's like a fantasy football deal that you're just like trying to figure out. Like, and the commissioner's going, do I hit approve or not?
Right. I mean, look, he talked about that. Talked about Hayden Hurst. He actually talked about Matt Skura. This was obviously before. The Yanda announcement. Matt Skura, like I said earlier, I thought was a piece that was expendable, but now not so much. You might want to be hanging on to him because of the experience and, like I said, the ability to play the interior all over.
Well, yeah. And the other guy that I knew that you and I were kind of talking about, that was a guy that he mentioned that we kind of neither of us really thought of, but when we started thinking of it more, it was like, okay, that kind of makes a little bit of sense, was Anthony Averett.
Yeah, Anthony Averett is a guy that he's still super young. He hasn't really had the opportunity here because obviously we have some of the best corners in the league blocking his way, but he did show some promise late in the season last year that might be enticing for a couple other teams, again, for draft picks.
He's got some upside potential. Mm-hmm. So he's got some serious upside potential. Like you said, he's a young guy. He's impressionable. He just came, you know, he's in one of the top rated defenses in the league. Why not pick up a guy like him? And we can spare the depth to an extent.
The only thing I'll shoot that down with is he was a low round draft pick, so he's not costing the Ravens much. And as we've seen in years past, cornerback depth is at an absolute premium. When somebody goes down, you have to have somebody to step up. And if you're potentially losing Jimmy Smith, because we don't know where he's going to end up.
No.
Right? Potentially losing Brandon Carr. There's two guys you're already down. You throw another piece in there like Anthony Averett. He gets traded away. You've completely depleted your cornerback.
But to
depth.
Go back at your argument that you've used for the past several weeks, what's one of the roles that you go for in the draft every year?
But the draft takes time to develop, especially if you're drafting later on in the
if you're drafting a late round guy. I got you.
Right.
Okay.
So I don't think the Anthony Averett piece is there, unless you were just blown away with a deal that you couldn't. Couldn't turn down.
Well, makes sense. Well, all right. Well, we're talking about drafts, right?
Right.
So you and I, we made a decision this week. We haven't discussed this, so we are getting true, legitimate reactions on air to our picks. We have both picked two guys that we would love to see become a Raven.
Yep.
And one guy that we feel is flying under the radar when it comes to the draft.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to let you go first. Who is your first guy that you would love to see as a Raven?
All right. So... I'll pick the second guy first. And the reason I say that is because I think he makes the most sense for this team. I don't think he's going to be there when the Ravens pick in the first round. I would love to see him fall there. It's going to be close.
So this is your realistic pick, not your I wish pick.
Yeah, this is my more realistic pick. I'm hoping he falls to the Ravens. And that's Clavon Chasen, the LSU edge rusher. This guy, 6'4", 250 pounds. He's everything that you want in a true pass rushing defensive end, outside linebacker.
Right.
Like, he's everything that you want. Great first step explosion and burst. He's got, the problem that we talked about with Jalen Ferguson was that he had the bull rush, but he didn't have all the other moves that kind of
complemented. He didn't have the swim move. He couldn't go around somebody. Yeah.
This dude's got the whole gambit. I mean, the speed rush, the bull rush, the counters, the spins. I mean, he's got just about everything that you would want out of a pure pass rush specialist. But the beauty part about it is it doesn't end there. This guy's got the athleticism to drop back in coverage. He can be good in zone coverage. He can be good in man coverage. That's been an area of concern, is that we've had these specialists, right, that are usually pretty good at either pass rush, but not so good against the run. Not so good against
the other.
Right, exactly. This is that complete player that, man, if this guy is even close, If he's at that number 20 pick, you're sitting there and you're a couple picks away and he's available at 20, he's that guy that I might think about packaging a pick, trading up, and going after because he fills a dramatic need for this team.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see that. For me, I think he has the upside. He has the potential. Like you said, he kind of has the full package, but he's a guy that some other teams aren't necessarily looking at because there's other guys that are more well-known and more along lines of guys that are going to go in the first top 10.
Right.
But, you know, I agree with you. If he's there, hell yeah. If you're a few picks away, you can't be trading 10 picks up, though.
I've seen some mocks where he's going, you know, like you said, closer to the top 10. I've seen some mocks where he's fallen to us. So,
right.
I mean, everybody's mock is a little bit different, and everybody's – obviously nobody knows what the hell's going to happen when the, you know, the draft comes.
You could trade up and get Daniel Jones if you
– But, right, if four quarterbacks go in the top 10 picks – things are going to change. Things are going to happen. People are going to fall. And if he's one of those guys, like I said, that falls to that number 20 pick, you've got to think about moving up to get him.
Well, they're what? They're pick 28, right?
Yeah.
This year. So eight picks, jumping up eight picks to get him, I mean, if he's 23, maybe, but I don't know if I'm willing to go more than five picks up to trade
all
up
right.
on that.
All right, we'll
situation.
See. Well, who's your guy?
So for me, the guy that I'm going to go with, I'm going to go with not the slam dunk guy, but the guy that I think they can get is Justin Jefferson in this draft.
Okay. Wide receiver, LSU guy, which has never happened, by the way. We just went with two LSU guys, and the Ravens have never drafted an LSU guy.
Yeah, no, never
Where's
happened.
Where's the Alabama guy? What's wrong with you? I'm
hold that thought.
Hold your thoughts there.
Oh, hold that thought.
Sorry.
That's coming.
But no, Justin Jefferson, this kid, he's got good, solid speed. He would be a great opposite side to a Hollywood. He can burn guys, but he also has the catch radius. He has the ability to go up and get the ball. He's a solid mix. I would say, if I'm going to equate it, it's a solid mix of Miles Boykin and Hollywood Brown. He's got the speed to really get past the defense. He's got the size like Miles Boykin does at 6'3". What is he? I think he's 6'3", 250. Or 256, sorry. So for me, the other thing that he is he's got a good catch rate. You know, when you look at his catch rate, 83% is damn good.
Yeah.
Especially when you're dealing with Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is a good quarterback. He's a throwing quarterback. He was able to go get the ball no matter where Joe threw it.
Yeah.
Right? So he's a guy that I think could fall. He's falling under the radar because of some other guys. I won't mention any names for obvious purposes. But I think he's a guy that's going under the radar a little bit in the first round. He could fall to us in the second round if things worked out really crazy, but I think I see him in the first round.
He's that late first round, potentially early second round pick, but I think he'd be a good fit for the Ravens. I would not be disappointed with that. But
you got a better wide receiver, I know.
And this guy, again, he won't be available when the Ravens come knocking. But again, another piece that you got to think about potentially moving up for. You guys, I talked about it last week. You know I'm big on Denzel Mims. He's a guy that I really, really like out of Baylor. But
wait, he's not from Alabama.
But that said, I can't get out of my head how exciting this Ravens team would be if you added a guy like Henry Ruggs. If you think about the type of speed, right, with Hollywood Brown, Henry Ruggs, Lamar Jackson, you add, you know, even Justice Hill out there with his kind of speed and athleticism, who are you going to guard?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, you don't have – you put him out there with those guys, even Miles to an extent. Yeah, I mean, there's question marks. Who are you going to put on who?
He ran a 4.27 40. The dude's speed is absolutely ridiculous, but it's not just about speed. Like, this kid's got great instincts, got great hands, good ball skills, 5'11 and 190 pounds, so he's not terribly small, but he's not huge. He's, you know, a little bit smaller than, like, Anquan Boldin. I think Anquan Boldin was, like, 6 foot. Obviously, Anquan was a lot stronger than this guy, but Anquan didn't have the speed that a Henry Ruggs has. And when you get the ball in this guy's hand, anytime he touches the ball, he's a threat to take it to the house.
Yeah, he's open space
anytime.
Guy.
And then, what you know, again, having that kind of an option in the return game adds another element.
Do you risk him in the return game, though,
if you've got him and Hollywood, you're risking one of them just for the extra benefit. Because how much did we get out of the return game last year?
Minimal.
Zilch. Yeah. We got nothing out of the return game last year. You add an explosive player like that to the return game, man, it changes everything.
I can see that. I can see where you're going with that. For me, my I'll call it my dream pick, you know, because I honestly don't think some projections have him coming to us. Many others I haven't seen, and I don't think he's going to make it to us, is linebacker Kenneth Murray. I think he has the potential to be, depending on what somebody's needs are and depending on what you have going in the top 10, he's got the potential to be in the top 15 to 20.
Mm.
If somebody, if
the problem was he had the injury at the combine. I think he pulled like a hamstring or something. So that typically affects his draft stock. Plus, I think he just said he wasn't going to do his pro day. I think he just said that.
Yeah, but that had nothing to do with injury because he said he didn't want to do his pro day because he felt like he had shown enough at the combine before he got injured.
He didn't show much of anything at the combine. That's the problem. But I mean, listen, I'm a big Kenneth Murray fan. I think he'd be a great fit here as an inside linebacker.
I mean, the guy's got. We haven't seen a lot of sideline to sideline range out of the linebacker in the Ravens for a little bit. We saw a little bit of that this year. With Bynes and LJ Fort.
Joe, you type too much if I talk too much, jerk. Good.
So I really look at it and I say, with Kenneth Murray, if he's able to fall back to us, he's a great pick. I think he gives you good ability to seal up that linebacker spot. LJ Fort, Josh Bynes. Josh Bynes is a free agent this year, so you're really kind of losing him. LJ Fort, you're going to have that ability to have that flexibility and bounce the two of them back and forth.
It's absolutely a need.
I think you have that ability to get him in on the pass rush. He can drop back into coverage. He has a lot of strengths that can play to what this team needs. All right, so let's go to the under the radar guy, right? Yeah. Who's your guy that you could think could go undrafted or we can get late in the draft?
So again, an undrafted guy or a guy that might be available late in the draft, a guy that maybe you've heard about through some of the latest news articles that have been out there, Tyshawn Render. Name ring a bell?
His name.
Middle Tennessee State defensive end, 6'4", 256. You know what stands out to me about this kid that would be a plus for us in multiple ways? Bill Belichick went and recruited this guy, went and watched this guy during the offseason, like on his own, while everybody was at the combine. Bill Belichick went to this guy for his workouts, his individual workouts, and checked this guy out. That says something.
Yeah, when you're on Bill Belichick's radar, that does say something.
Right. Bill Belichick didn't send somebody else to go do it. He went there himself to go check it out. So not only is this guy's athletic ability good, I mean, if you look at everything that this guy can bring to the table, he is that, for me, like if I'm going to compare him to somebody that we've seen before, he's kind of that Jarrett Johnson type guy, okay. JJ, the old JJ, yeah. Right?
He was I-95.
Never a great pass rusher, but a great edge setter, high motor. He's an effort kind of guy. He's a guy that he will go and go and go until the play is over. You never question his work ethic, right? Like that's just how this guy is. And at that kind of size, with the speed that he adds to it, he'd be a guy. And to keep him away from the Patriots for me would be a steal in itself, taking him away from them. Obviously, if Bill Belichick saw something in the guy, I've got a lot of faith in that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a great point. For me, my under the radar guy also comes from Tennessee, but it's not Middle Tennessee. It's from Tennessee Volunteers. For me, I think the guy that I think goes most under the radar is their edge rusher, Darrell Taylor. And this guy is 6'4", 260, and he has what's being called one of the best first steps in the NCAA right now. This guy can put a good swim move. He's able to beat a lot of guys on the edge. He's able to really set that edge. But he's also got that strong ability with that swim move to get around the edge. Mm-hmm. And when you can do that, that's something that we've said. If we can put something opposite of a Judon and have that strength, two edge setters like that, man, this defense could be unstoppable.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously both went in the same direction with position on this. Yeah. I mean, obviously, this is obviously the biggest area need, especially if Matt Judon's not going to be in the fold next year. You've got to have a plan.
Hell, they're both under the radar. Get them both!
I'm hoping your first pick at edge rusher or pass rusher is not late in the draft. I'm hoping you made one or two already by this point, because this team sorely, sorely needs that. And these are the kind of guys, those diamonds in the rough, that if you can find these guys and they pay off, man, that's how you set yourself up for future success.
Yeah.
Is, I mean, finding those diamonds in the rough like that.
We've seen DaCosta do it multiple times now. This offseason, we're going to see if he can do it again.
Well, one guy that I personally do not ever want to see wearing a Ravens uniform. I do not ever want to see this guy wearing purple or black.
I made just looked a down comment. Come on.
Made a comment on Instagram today that he would love to play with his cousin.
Is that L-U-V? Love?
Love. Love to play with his cousin, Antonio Brown.
God, no. Please, no.
Thank you.
Hell no.
Scott?
No.
I was going to say, all right.
Abort. No.
James?
Abort.
James?
I was fractioning
James said no. Thank God.
I was cutting in 5 minutes here because I was going to tear you to shreds if you said, well, let me think about it here. It actually would be something good.
I mean, look what he's doing right now. I mean, look what he did last year. Never mind. I'm sorry. I can't even.
That guy.
He had one good game for the Patriots. What do you want me to say?
Look, it's not about athletic ability. The guy could still come in and be a dominant wide receiver in this league. It's everything else about this guy that makes him a cancer, and you do not want him in your locker room.
He's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Yeah. Literally.
Let's exactly. Be real. Antonio Brown ain't winning any trophies.
No, not at all. But one that did, yet another one, John Harbaugh, if you'll notice,
yes,
up in our little picture over here, or over there. I got to point it to the right one. This was one of those trophies, another one of the Coach of the Year trophies. I had to put the picture up here because the trophy
you
itself.
Can't, the picture doesn't even do it justice because yeah, the size of it.
It's so small. You got to go find this online or whatever. The picture, the trophy reminds me of a Light Bright.
You literally said that, and then James got here. He saw the picture. He goes, it looks like a Light Bright trophy. You're like, it's exactly what it looks like.
I'm such a child. I loved Light Bright when I was a kid.
I just bought my son one this year.
They're still around? Wow.
They're still around. They make them now where it's like it's handheld. It's like an Etch-A-Sketch, but it's a Light Bright.
Oh, man, it's just another accolade for a great season, 14-2. John Harbaugh deserves every award that he's gotten this year. All right, Scott, it's time for some Terps talk.
Some shell and tell.
Some shell and tell, man, is the regular season is now a wrap for the Terps.
She done.
The Terps win their first Big Ten title. Now, albeit, it was a share of the Big Ten. But at the end of the day, they won a Big Ten title.
You said the word that triggers me.
Figured.
All right, millennial.
No, share. It wasn't participation. Right? It was share. But it might as well have been a participation trophy.
Well, it was a rough go to get there. They did not play very good basketball down the stretch. Obviously,
and that's what frustrates me. I love the Terps. Mm-hmm. I love the Terps. But that's what frustrates me about the idea of a shared title. Stop doing this stuff. Come down to some stat. I don't care. I don't care if it's points allowed. If you want to say, okay, the team that allowed the most points out of the conference, all three teams went 14-3 in the conference. Okay, great. We don't go, oh, you all three win. No, name somebody that actually won it. Unfortunately, I know that if it came down to it, the stats that I'm thinking of, like points allowed, like points scored, I don't think the Terps would win that. I think it would wind up being Michigan State or Wisconsin that was going to win those.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's nice to see them win a title. It's nice, but I kind of say it's a title with an asterisk.
I don't know. I think... The regular season title's cool and all, but it ultimately comes down to the Big Ten tournament, right?
But then why have conferences?
You're playing the conference for your seeding in the tournament, right? That's why you have the individual conferences, which have their individual tournaments. You're playing the regular season games to see where you seed in that tournament, and then you have the tournament to decide the winner, right? They just give multiple awards out. They give you a regular season award, a Big Ten title.
An award for a tournament for a tournament.
I mean, essentially, they give you a regular season award, a tournament award, and then obviously the NCAA, the one that everybody's after, the big award. I don't know. I mean, I think it's cool regardless of
it
whether,
is. You know, I give them credit. They stayed in it long enough. This is the best season they've had in a long time. It's when you look at the way that they've been able to play down the stretch, it's been a little bit harder to do that, but they won the title. I give them the credit. And you know what? It was great to see it on a night where, you know, they celebrate Anthony Cowan.
Yeah.
Who comes out, has a great game. Sticks has a great game. Both guys, you know, have a double-double.
Yep.
I think Cowan actually was two assists shy of a double-double. But both guys come out. By halftime, I think both of them were very close to a double-double. It's just Anthony didn't get the additional assists. But to see this on that night, Anthony, the emotion was there with him. The emotion was there with Turge because he was so proud of this guy that he picked up and everybody thought was, you know, couldn't make it and couldn't do it. And here is this guy that has led this team to a Big Ten title.
Yeah, I mean, look, to win 83-70 in your game, you know, your season finale, in my opinion, they played their best team game.
Oh, hands down.
Overall in this game. They shot 56% from the field, including 40% from beyond the arc. That's been this a team's Achilles heel all year long. You know, it hasn't been the shooting that's got them to this point. It's been the shooting that's hurt them, right? That hasn't allowed them to win some of these games. And obviously, some of these teams that have been coming in here have just been hot shooting teams. For the Terps to put it together finally in the last game of the year, maybe that gives them the confidence that they need to carry through.
Well, and to that point with the numbers, you know, they had one of their lower games that we've seen this year as far as rebounds, 29 rebounds, but Michigan only had 22, which most of their rebounds came off defensive rebounds, which is what you want. That means the shots are falling through for you on the offense, and on the defensive side of the ball, you're able to get up against the boards, get those rebounds, and get it back down the court and make solid decision-making shots. And that's one thing I saw out of this game. I thought it was a great point that you said that it was a team game because we saw a lot of passing the ball, finding the open guy. We saw a lot of working from the inside out.
Inside out was crucial in this game.
Which is what we talked about. Jalen Smith took, I think, 3 shots from beyond the arc. That was it. Which is one of his lowest in the past, I think, 6 or 10 games.
Right.
So for him to really step up and get inside that paint, be physical, it's what we expected, what we needed. Both him and Cowan have 4 fouls in this game. But at the same time, it was just good to see them go out on top and really in a dominant type fashion. While the score doesn't necessarily say dominant,
83-70.
I mean, it's a 13-point lead
against Michigan. That's pretty good.
The end of the game, the last minute and a half, they got within, I think it was 8 or 9 points, which at that point, and let's be real, at that point, that's still a doable game. You're still on the edge of your seat a little bit.
We've seen the Terps win many of them that way.
Exactly. But then you see them kind of pick up and make some good shots, make some decent shots. We see the foul at the end of the game where they pull, you know, Cowan and Sticks out at the end of the game. They give them and I loved how they did that. Turge pulled one out.
Yeah.
Said, hold on. Let the crowd calm down and then pulls out the other one.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool too. But in this game, I think the telling factor was, one, how this team shot as a whole. We talked about that. But the other thing was getting the play that they got from Eric Ayala and Aaron Wiggins in this game. If you guys get – if this team can get these two playing at the level that they were playing at last year, like they did in this game – it's game over for anybody in this tournament.
Right.
There's nobody that can beat this team, this Terps team, when everybody's contributing.
If
like
all
this.
Cylinders are firing, yeah.
Eric Ayala in this game, 19 points, 6 of 10 shooting from the field, 3 of 4 from 3.
Well, then you had Wiggins, too, who was also playing well. 15 points in 27 minutes off the bench. Dante Scott started this game, and Wiggins came in and took away a lot of his minutes in this game because of his ability to put up the points. He shoots 6 for 8 from the field and also 3 for 4 from beyond the arc.
Right. I mean, like you said, earlier on in this game, we were controlling the rebounds, which has been pretty impressive considering the lack of size that we have. Dante Scott wasn't hitting some of his shots early on, wasn't really involved in the flow of the offense. They pulled him out. Aaron Wiggins came in and immediately had an offensive impact.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of go. I want to go back to Dante Scott for a second, right? Mm-hmm. When you look at Dante Scott, he's really been struggling to have an impact in both the games, the Rutgers games that they lost, as well as this Michigan game. In 40 minutes over the last 2 games, he's 0 for 5 from the field, 0 for 4 from 3. His 2 points came that he has in those two games came off free throws. He has 1 rebound, 3 assists, and 2 steals. We've seen such a decline in his production over the past 6 games.
Yes.
Does that concern you going into the tournament that you're kind of – is he getting tired? Is it depth? What is it?
So for Dante Scott, he's one of those guys that we don't need a ton of offensive output from. If we can get the offensive output from Wiggins, from Ayala, Sticks and Cowan are obviously going to come regardless, right, as long as they're not struggling from the field. We don't need a ton of offensive output from Dante Scott. What we need from him is we need him to be able to control the boards. We need to be able to have him bodying up on defense. That's where he fits into this role. I agree with you. His offensive game has been up and down all year. Yeah. He's a freshman. You know, where he was in the beginning of the year made me question why he was getting so much minutes. Then as we started progressing through the season, we started to see him get a lot more comfortable, looked a lot better. And I still think that he has an important role in this team's destiny of going deep into the tournament. It's just not going to be offensive.
But you're talking about being on the defensive side of the ball. And I guess to an extent, you know, being able to screen guys, being able to, you know, be down low and block guys out. He still only has one rebound on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
And that's my point, is it's not just a production from the offensive side of the ball. It's a production all around. 3 assists, 2 steals, 1 rebound. It's not like we've seen crazy production out of him. And this is in 40 minutes of play. He only had, I think it was either 12 or 18. I don't know why those two numbers are coming to mind in the game against Michigan, which is why we saw Wiggins and we saw Lindo come in for a while, who was stepped up his production on the defensive side of the ball.
Lindo and Tomajic both have been playing crucial minutes and been playing a little bit better as they've gotten more minutes. But back to Dante Scott for a second. Like, in that Rutgers game, nobody could hit the broadside of a barn. Nobody was making a shot. So they were trying to get more shooters on the court. They were trying to keep Wiggins out there longer, trying to hope that somebody would catch fire and take over that game. It just never happened in that Rutgers game at all.
Yeah, but
you saw what happened in the Michigan game. Michigan, for us to be able to put up 83 points against them,
it's
super impressive. And to get the offensive output from everybody collectively as a group, Cowan really wasn't much of a factor in the second half of that game. He had like 12 or 13 points in the first half.
Right.
He wasn't a big factor in the second half, but that's what's going to be crucial to this team's success, is if Ayala and Wiggins can play big roles.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I kind of, you know, going back to Scott for a quick second, I think my point with everything was saying that it's a little bit of cause for concern with me for depth of this team. We've seen some guys be able to come off the bench and do well.
Right.
But I gotta address the other thing that kind of led me into this, or that's leading me out of this and into the next question, is recently a local radio personality that moved from evenings to midday, not going to mention any names. His name might be Queenman.
Ken Schmeiman?
Yeah, that guy. Anyway, he questioned. He was like, this is supposed to be the deepest team we've seen, and we're not seeing it. The depth off the bench is horrible. They're not able to do it. That's why they're not able to do it. That's why they're not able to put points on the board. Uh-huh. My question to you is, are we seeing at this point how much of a role the Mitchell twins were actually playing in the depth of this team?
We've seen it since they left. Like, that was the big thing with him. Now, with them, it completely depleted us of productive depth. Right. That put all the emphasis on Tomajic, on Lindo, and neither one of them have stepped up and had a big enough role that you can, you know, count on them being that seventh,
you can't
eighth
lean
guy
on them,
yeah, in a rotation, right? But they're going to get more minutes as the tournament goes on. Once they start playing more closer games, right, and they start going through these tournaments, these guys are going to get worn down, right? Yeah. They've already played a 30-something game season. They're going to rely on some of these depth guys, and that's my biggest concern, is the depth. So, yes, losing the Mitchell twins was detrimental to this team as far as depth goes. But on the other side of that, this team totally turned things around as a unit when those guys left. So it was one of those additions by subtractions type moves where, okay, yes, I get it from a size perspective. It sucks. It hurts losing those guys. But when you're removing a potential bad, you know, cancer from a locker room because there's controversy with the players and the coach and that situation, it helps clear up the air and these guys play a little looser.
I understand that, but there was also, it may have been, and I'm just using your terminology, not by any means we're saying this is what it was,
the
cancer in the locker room, but you're removing a cancer in the locker room, but you're also removing that production that we saw on the court. I mean, both of these guys were taking up 10-plus minutes a game for this team. Right. They were your 7 and 8 guys. They were guys that you were able to go to and kind of lean on. And it hurt, and I think that's where I would disagree with you. I think we're feeling it now more so than ever. Yes, were we feeling it since when they left? Yeah, but we saw that nice run that they went on. We saw them getting hot even after that. But now I think you're feeling it because now I think that you're seeing the endurance factor play a role
100%
in these guys. And I think I'm still concerned. I still will voice my concern that we aren't seeing enough of Scholl getting ready to go into this tournament for him to be able to be an impact player in the tournament.
Scholl's just not there. He's just not. I mean, they tried to force him some minutes out there to get some experience and everything. And I was hopeful. I was hopeful that, you know, by the season end, I would have more confidence in him, but I don't.
But Lindo and Tomajic are still both question, you know, semi question marks as well. They're getting,
but I trust them a lot more.
Lindo is getting better. I do trust Lindo way more than the other two. But I think when it comes down to it, I think that's why I asked the question, because I think it really just goes to show you the endurance of this team. It's not necessarily that the depth was there; it's the endurance. We have depth on the team. It's just depth that you can trust.
Yeah.
There's a difference between having depth and depth that you can trust. And I think that's kind of what I wanted to lead to. But, you know, we've obviously got the tournament coming up, right?
Yeah.
So we got the Big Ten tourney that starts this week.
Potentially.
Maybe. Exactly. Maybe.
There was rumors going around today that the coronavirus may interrupt this tournament altogether and may postpone it for some time.
Which means so then we'll you got to turn around and postpone March Madness.
Yeah.
You got to postpone the tournament.
It's going to have a trickle-down effect. We'll see what happens. I'm not going to talk about the coronavirus. I know everybody's got their feelings and emotions on that. We'll leave that at bay. But, yeah, I mean, listen, they locked up the double bye. They get a number 3 seed. So they'll be playing Friday night, as long as everything goes. They'll be playing Friday night. I think it's a 9 o'clock tip, which is perfect. I get to go out to the bar and watch the game.
I'm
pumped.
That's the thing that I don't like about the bye. And here's why I say that. Because this game... The Nebraska is set to take on Indiana in the first game, which is set to happen tomorrow.
Right.
It's the second game of the day, which is after the first. I think the first one starts at 6, and then the next one's at 9.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, they're going to take on – the winner of that game takes on Penn State.
Right.
Again in the late game. And then when it comes to the Terps, that's the Terps matchup again on Friday. That is the fourth game of the day.
Right.
The last game of the day. So it's not a 9 o'clock guaranteed tip. We could be looking, if one of these other games goes into overtime, you could be looking potentially at a 10 or even 11 o'clock game time.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't affect anybody any differently. It affects both teams equally.
Yes, it does, because the next day, you know what the game time might be?
But I'm saying it affects the winner, whoever that winner is, equally.
But it affects them. But it affects the winner of that following game as well. So it affects them, because then the next day the first game starts at 3 o'clock, right. And then we would be in the game after that, which could potentially be 6-7 o'clock. So now these guys aren't even getting a full 24 hours worth of rest before they got to get back out there again. Now that I know that they've had two days to rest with a double bye,
right?
But at the same time, it still isn't exactly the most conducive schedule to be having. I'd much rather have that middle game where it's all the way through that Michigan State got.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is consistent with the way it is year in and year out with these tournaments. It's just kind of how it works, how the things shake out. But look, I'd much rather be on the end of having the double bye, playing the late game, and then having a follow-up game, you know, right after it. I'm okay with that scenario, but we'll have to see how that plays out. I think if, again, the Terps can get the type of production that they're getting right now from that 5th and 6th guy on the roster, that, mind you, we didn't mention this yet, Cowan and Sticks both won season honors this year for Big Ten All-American or all Big Ten players of the year.
Right.
Wiggins, speaking of Wiggins, won the coin flip, so he decided to be the 6th man of the year and wins that 6th men of the year award. So big kudos out to Wiggins, because he's had an up and down season. He's had some big games. He's had some not so big games.
Ryan's been critical of Wiggins a few times this year.
He has.
Speaking of Ryan, his wife chimes in, says she worked a 12-hour shift today and she's tired of hearing about coronavirus. She tells you to shut up.
I'm sure. No, that's why I said I brought it up real quickly and left it on the table. Not going to bring it up again.
All right. Let's move into our social media shout out. Brian, who do we got out there tonight? And what are some of our top comments or questions?
So I just want to say touche to all you nurses out there. There's been a couple of them that have been chiming in about the coronavirus, so be safe out there, and thank you for all that you do.
Yeah.
And besides that, I got Charlie, Samuel, Sherry, Connor, Justin, Joe C. I'm not going to say his last name. Yeah, there's a comment later for that one, Fred. Berto and Garnett. That's who I got for right now.
All right. So, any good comments out there? What do we got?
So I threw out there about give me some of your good memories of the past 3 years, and there's been a couple of them. Justin, he said, when I first started watching, me and Scott argued about Calvin Ridley.
I remember that.
Oh, I remember that.
And hold on. He said he was raped, by the way. I just want to throw that out
there.
Kind of was, Scott.
Whatever.
Sherry Reedy, one of our biggest fans.
What's going on, Sherry?
She goes, oh my God, there's been many great moments. I love the heated debates with Fred and Scott. They're so priceless.
We've had a few.
Yeah, we've had quite a few. Lamar might have been one in the very beginning.
There's been a couple of them. I felt very uncomfortable going, what did I sign up for? You know, Scott's got his arms just flailing everywhere, like the inflatable arm-waving balloon guy. And it's just been hysterical.
Appreciate everybody tuning in. I really appreciate all of your guys' support over the years. Like, that goes without being said. This show would not happen if it wasn't for you guys tuning in every week. And, you guys make it possible.
I really appreciate it.
I got one more, and then we'll move on.
Yeah.
This is from Joe Carloso.
Okay. Here we go. I saw some ignorant comments in there, Joe.
I couldn't resist. He said, my favorite part was Fred Donahue messing up my name on air, and Scott laughed. Laughed his ass off.
I helped him
with the audio before the first show.
That was great. Hysterical. I've done everything I can to make sure that I pronounce his name correctly, Carloso, since then.
The best part about that whole thing was I let you go on it for like weeks without correcting.
I had no idea. I think it was the
mean, man. That's mean.
I think it was the fantasy football draft. It all actually came out that I
and you looked at me. You were like, you weren't saying anything. I was gonna see how long it's gonna take you to correct it.
And I'm not the one that has problems with names, Brian.
I agree, Brian. Yeah, you were absolutely correct. I am horrible with last names.
Speaking of horrible with last names, in the 2 minute warning this week, you had written Tom Barty. I'm assuming you meant Tom Brady.
Yeah, oh, did I do that? And you fixed it for me.
I did. I fixed it for you.
I appreciate it.
All right, Scott. It's time for some bros, bows, and o's, man. And unfortunately, the news around the Orioles this week has not been as positive, has not been what we wanted to hear. Listen, we don't know any details yet. And
zero
details.
We are not speculating.
But Trey Mancini, the heart and soul of this Orioles team, really, in my opinion, the face of the franchise at this point, because, I mean, if we're not looking at Adley Rutschman or anybody down in the minors, like, he is it, you know, for this team. He's the face. He's that leader in the locker room. He's the leader on the field. He's everything that you would want out of a baseball player.
He's the leader off the field, too.
He goes about it the right way.
Yeah.
But he's going to have to step away from baseball for the foreseeable future. We don't know how long he's going to be out. We don't know why he's going to be out. Again, not going to speculate on why, but it doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't. I mean, when you have players, originally it was, okay, he's going to step away for a medical procedure. Then it was he has completely left camp. That was the verbiage that was used.
Well, early on, it was he was having like flu-like symptoms, and he had missed a little bit of time, and then he came back and was still not feeling right, had some more symptoms. And now he's decided to walk away.
Yeah, now they're saying he's, you know, stepped away from camp, undergoing a medical procedure. The thing that concerns me, and we are not speculating by any means what's happening. That's not our right. It's his privacy to keep it what it is. And I applaud the team and everybody on the team for doing it.
Agreed.
But I do have concerns about the foreseeable future with some of the comments that we've heard from some players and some coaches about, you know, just the fact that they really feel specifically and I put this in quotes because this was what was used. We really feel for him and his family. You know, it leads you to believe a certain direction. What that may be, that's up to you to kind of think about what you may think it is. But
at the end of the day, man, this guy's personal life, his health comes first and foremost.
Oh, hell yeah.
Baseball takes a complete backseat to all this stuff. I wish nothing but the best for Trey Mancini, his family, his health. I hate to see something like this happen to this guy.
The fans, he was really appreciative of the fans and the team support that he's had. He actually put out a tweet. That's why I thought this little gif here of him, you know, blowing a kiss was perfect for this scenario because this is exactly what he said. And I quote, "I want to express my heartfelt gratitude to everyone for their kind sentiments and well wishes. It further drives home the fact that I am surrounded by the best family, friends, teammates, and fans that I could ever ask for." He then followed that tweet up with a different tweet. "Once there is more clarity, I will be sure to keep everyone updated over the next few days. I look forward to a healthy recovery and being back on the field soon. Yeah. So it leads you to believe he feels in his future he sees himself playing baseball, which is nice.
Yeah.
But he's not, you know, he says he's going to provide the clarity for everyone. I would love, and I really hope that it does stay that way. I hope nobody gets into, you know, as much as some people look at you and I as media, I hope that people like us and
we're
people
just
not like us.
Idiots in front of microphones.
Right. I hope people not like us and people like us don't sit here and speculate what it is and, you know, and put out false rumors and things. Yeah. Let Trey be the one to come out and say what happened. If that so chooses, if he comes back and says, you know what? It was no big deal. I don't even want to talk about it. We're going to move on. Then let it be.
And I hope that's what it is. Yeah. I hope that is. Maybe it was a false alarm, whatever it is. Either way, take as much time as you possibly need. Get whatever you need to get taken care of. You, your health, your family come first before anything else. And here at Birdland BS, we all wish you nothing but the best, Trey, and a speedy recovery, man.
Cheers to a speedy recovery, whatever's going on for you, brother. But I guess for me, what I wanted to ask you was, obviously, you mentioned heart and soul this team.
Yeah.
What effect do you think this has on this team? You know, and we don't know how long this is going to go on.
Right.
But we're just going to say foreseeable future. Let's say he doesn't make opening day. Worst case scenario, right?
Yeah.
What kind of impact do you see on this having on the team?
I mean, it's huge, right? They don't really have a ton of veteran leadership in that locker room right now. And Chris Davis has never been that guy to lead by example. No. Or, I mean, Christ, he shows up late to spring training. He, you know, obviously, we all know the performance on the field, although that's been different in spring, whatever it may be. It's a big loss because he's that communicator. He's that guy on the field that can kind of keep people in their places, you know, call out different, you know, whether somebody needs to come in and play deep, those types of things. Like, he's that communicator for everybody on the field. Obviously, the production, he's that one guy. If you went down the Orioles roster right now, top to bottom, and you tried to tell me, like, pencil in where this guy, what's he going to hit, how many home runs he's going to hit, how many RBIs he's going to hit,
he'd be the first guy you're filling out.
Trey Mancini would be the easiest one to do, right? Yeah. He's so consistent in his play. Nobody else on this roster can do that. So, yeah, it's definitely a concern.
When you look at that, too, you also, you know, a way to gauge a guy is a guy with the highest trade value, right? And Trey Mancini would absolutely right now have the highest trade value for the Orioles.
Yeah.
And we've talked about him potentially leaving and him being used as trade bait, depending on if they wanted to build this team around him or not.
Right.
When you have a guy that's that impactful that you're trying to decide whether you're going to build a team around him or not, and you lose him due to whatever unforeseen circumstances, that hurts. Yeah. That hurts big time. I agree with you. I think this is going to play a major role. I'm curious to see how long this plays out before he's able to come back or at least, you know, give a timetable. But to your point, wish him the best of luck.
Damn, man.
You know, thoughts are with him and his family, whatever it may be. You know, like you said, from us here at Birdland BS, I think it really just goes to show that he's in a community that cares about him because he cares about the community. And I think that's something that we haven't talked about and I do want to hit on real quick. I mean, Trey Mancini has done so much for the community. He has been one of the biggest proponents. Everybody that is in Baltimore listens to Scott and Jeremy, especially. Yeah. Trey is a big proponent of Mo Gabba.
Oh, yeah, huge.
He's been behind him, a huge supporter there. He's always out in the community. It's always nice to see his face. He's more than willing to sign autographs from everything I've heard. Yep. He's a nice guy to
talk
to.
He's the complete package, man.
He really is, and it's a guy that you really want to build an organization around, and I hope they do, and I hope, you know, to that point, that we are able to build that organization around him.
Well, speaking of building the organization, let's shift our gears a little bit. Let's talk, you know, something that we haven't talked much about. The Orioles, obviously, are in prime position for this year's upcoming draft. They're going to have the number 2 overall pick.
Yeah.
We haven't had a whole lot of time to dive into some of the prospects out there. You know me, last year, I was huge on Adley Rutschman. That was the guy for me. They better not screw this up with the first pick. They got it right, right? I was excited about that, and I'm still excited about that for the future. I think he is the future for this team.
He's the future catcher for this team, yeah.
Absolutely. So let's take a look at maybe a couple of prospects that we think could be there for the Orioles at that number 2 spot.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's quite a few guys that come to mind. I'm not going to go with the number 1 guy. You know, we can kind of hit on him at the end, who is Emerson Hancock. He's, you know, projected to be the number 1 pick as a right-handed pitcher out of Georgia, I believe.
Yeah.
But the guy that I think makes a lot of sense for the Orioles is solid middle infielder Austin Martin.
Yeah.
This guy's played shortstop. He actually has moved over to third as of recent, as of this year. But his ability to hit the ball, he's a solid hitter, man.
Yeah.
He has one of the purest swings, as they're calling it, in the draft right now. He's got, he doesn't have above average power,
right?
But he's got a way above average solid contact. I mean, this guy's able to hit the ball. He's able to hit it hard where it needs to go. He led the NCAA in runs with 87 last year. NCAA Division I baseball.
Yeah.
He led in runs. He also led the SEC with a 392 average and a 486 OBP.
Yeah.
That's impressive at the college level.
Yep.
You know, especially with some of these guys that he's facing, this is a definite top five draft pick. And with the Orioles at number two, we know we could use some help at middle infield. I think it makes sense. Austin Martin's a way to go.
Austin Martin would be a great pick. To your point, as a middle infielder, they tend to be some of the more athletic guys in the drafts, right? So even if they don't work out, if they don't have the arm strength as a shortstop, or they don't have, you know, the athletic ability as second baseman, you can kind of put them in other places in the right outfield, that kind of thing. So they bring versatility. And with a guy with his kind of bat, as you mentioned, that'd be huge for this team, right? We need that table-setting kind of guy, that number one or number two type hitter. Yeah. And, you know, Austin would probably fill that role within a couple of years, I feel like.
Fairly solid speed as well, not to mention.
For me, a guy that I think would be huge addition for this team, if you want somebody that can just straight up hit the cover off the baseball, I mean, straight up mash, Spencer Torkelson out of Vanderbilt. Yeah. He's a first baseman, and I know we already have
we're a little backlog there, Fred.
I know that. I know we have some first basemen there, but, you know, this is a guy who hit 46 home runs in his first 439 collegiate at-bats.
That's damn impressive.
This dude's got one home run
every 10 at-bats.
Right. But here's the thing. Here's the better thing of it, right? How many home runs?
Scratch that. That's one every 9 at-bats almost.
How many home runs did Chris Davis hit when he was in his prime? He hit 45 to 50-some home runs a year when he was in his prime, right? What was his big drawback? That if he wasn't hitting the runs, he was striking out, right? This guy walks just as much as he strikes out.
Ooh, so he's got a real solid eye.
Really good batter's eye. Very patient hitter. His on-base percentage is going to go through the roof because guys are going to want to pitch around this guy because he's got that type of power. When you're talking about production at the major league level, the only way you score runs is by getting guys on base, right? And that's been the kind of formula for success. When you're talking about like Billy Bean baseball, all that stuff.
It's all by the numbers. Yeah.
All about it was about the numbers, on base percentage, getting guys in position to be driven to score. Right. This guy gives you the ability to hit the damn cover off the baseball and get on base at any given opportunity.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a great move.
Breaking Barry Bonds type records.
Yeah, I mean, it would be quite impressive to see this kid be able to, you know, be on the team and really develop with the Orioles. But another guy, and I'm going to go back to the middle infield here for a second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you were a big fan of Brian Roberts, right? You still are.
Yeah, huge. Yep.
The next guy for me reminds me a lot of Brian Roberts. Brian Roberts never had the arm for shortstop,
no.
Right? But he has a solid second base arm,
mm-hmm.
solid bat. That's what Nick Gonzalez, his second baseman at New Mexico State, brings. He won the Cape Cod League MVP honors this past summer with a 351 average, a 451 OBS, and a 630 OPS.
Wow. Wow. That's stupid good.
That's stupid good.
Yeah.
When you look at this, his biggest knock of anything is the fact that he only has the arm for the second base.
Yeah.
But you know what?
You got to have a damn good second baseman.
He's got solid speed. This kid can steal like crazy. He's got the range at second base. He can get out there just like a shortstop range. He just doesn't have the arm.
Right.
So worst case scenario, you have that feed play. But for me, his ability, we need a second baseman. Our middle infield, I think Richie Martin provides us something there already at shortstop. I think he has potential, and he's got a lot of high ceiling.
And the good thing about Richie Martin is now with the signing of Iglesias, that allows him to go down to the minor
leagues. He can develop.
And develop even more. So don't give up hope on Richie Martin. I think he's still got a future with this team.
Exactly. But that's why if you can get a guy like a Nick Gonzalez and be able to put him in position to do that. Because let's not forget, you know, I talked about Richie Martin, who was a shortstop that moved over to third base.
Right.
He's got the arm to be able to handle it, but he's, you just transition him to one position to ask him to transition back. That's starting to play around with a guy's future.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why I think Nick Gonzalez makes another solid idea of a pick. Now let's get into the guy that we're not going to get. And if they, well, if we get him, if he goes second, you better damn well take him.
Yeah, and that's right-handed pitcher Emerson Hancock out of Georgia. Scott mentioned him earlier. This guy, he's got the full repertoire of pitches. He's got four pitches that are all plus at their best. He can command everything. Consistently around the 94 to 97 range, has topped out at 99 mile an hour. Numbers similar to Bundy that we saw how that played out later on in his career. But look, he's got a mid-80s slider that can manipulate well. He had a 1.99 ERA, 97 Ks in 90 innings as a sophomore.
Impressive.
Right. So this kid, if you want a pitcher, which this team desperately needs, if the Detroit Tigers do not pick this guy number one overall, you just had a beauty fall in your lap.
Yeah, it's one of you kind of go back to what we've talked about before, of hoping they don't screw him up in the development stages.
Yeah.
You know, like they unfortunately, I'm gonna say it like they did with Bundy, because that's exactly what happened.
But all of that's changed, right? The turnover that we've had in the minor league development, you know, and just everything in general.
Player development in general.
Player development as a whole has been completely revamped. I've got faith in this group that we have.
Yeah, I think it definitely comes down to it. I think it makes sense. If he falls, you're taking him, period. I don't care who you thought it was on there. I think you're taking him. Another piece, just to touch on it.
Yeah.
You mentioned the coronavirus earlier.
Oh, Jesus. Here we go again. Kaylee, turn it off.
The Orioles aren't signing autographs because of the coronavirus. Because there was a confirmed case
in
Sarasota.
Thank you, CNN.
And I think this is going to be a trend, not just that the Orioles are going to do. Well, you're going to see this across the board, I think, pretty much with
hold on a second.
Athletics.
I am actually going to come to the defense of the Orioles here for a second when it comes to this. Who is the most at risk with coronavirus? Older individuals.
Yeah.
Older than 50 and 60, right? Who goes to most of the Orioles games at spring training?
Yeah, it's the retirement
community. That's right, what Sarasota is. That's why they're doing that risk.
Yeah.
So I'm coming to their defense, but I get it. I understand. I understand it's going to hurt a few kids.
Right.
But mostly it's older people down there anyway.
And now it's time for the 2-minute warning.
Time for the 2-minute warning.
Come on, junior bartender. Let's go.
He's whipping James into shape and pouring me some shots. You want another one? You good?
Oh, God.
I'm good right now. All right, there you go. Brian.
You just did not see what just happened. I'm going to your HR. That is just wrong, sir. Wrong. Oh,
so I have not read these 2-minute warning topics yet because I stopped at Tom Barty.
I was like, oh, boy. I'm sorry.
This is going to be a long 2-minute warning if he's already spelling Tom Brady's name wrong. What do we got?
So I kind of went a little, you know, on the rumor mill on this first one, so bear with me. So there is speculation that the Niners are not interested in Tom Brady anymore. Thank God we can put that to bed. However, there is now some rumors that San Fran is now looking at Kirk Cousins. What is your take on the whole rumor mill situation going on in San Francisco?
For me, what the hell's wrong with Garoppolo? He got you to the playoffs, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
Why the hell are you looking at another first-string style quarterback? Kirk Cousins is going to want ridiculous money yet again. It's just absolutely ridiculous to sit here and think that you were going to go any other route than Garoppolo, unless you think there's something completely medically wrong with Garoppolo. Why are you doing this?
What has Kirk Cousins won yet? He's won absolutely nothing. He's won at sucking. That's what he's won at, right?
How do you like that?
Yeah. You like that? He's won a catchphrase. That's about all he's done.
Oh, God.
Invest in Jimmy Garoppolo. He's not the greatest quarterback, but he can do enough to get it done, especially with that defense they have.
All right, so Barry Bonds had an interview over the weekend talking about how he felt like he was blackballed, as he called it. The death sentence was given to him by the MLB. Do you guys have any pity for Barry Bonds?
For me, I have to say no. I mean, that's probably the traditionalist as far as baseball in me is speaking. But I don't have any pity for Barry Bonds. I think he carved his grave, and he was cheating so much that it was overlooked for so many years, and then it finally came out that he had failed drug tests and he had failed, had issues. I just don't see it. If you want me to give pity to somebody, it's to Pete Rose. Simple as that.
I do have pity for him in the sense that Mark McGwire was accused of all of the same things, yet he was a hitting coach for the St. Louis Cardinals. So he was given a job. He was given an opportunity that Barry Bonds hasn't. Why?
Oh, hold on. Barry Bonds didn't have an opportunity as a Marlins batting coach.
Yeah, he was a Marlins batting coach.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot all about that. Okay. Well, my thing is, the steroid era as a whole hasn't been figured out yet, right? Nobody has been able to figure out what the appropriate punishment, what the appropriate, how do you handle it from a record standpoint? What do you do about the Hall of Fame? The whole thing is a goddamn cluster F. They need to get it figured out.
Yeah.
They absolutely need to get it figured out.
All right. What a good show, as always.
Very good. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. Again, cheers to 3 years at Birdland BS and three and many more from here on out. Thank you guys again for tuning in.
Cheers to you guys. We appreciate you guys tuning in each and every week. As always, you can check us out on our website, www.birdlandbs.com. While you're there, you can obviously check out all of our episodes. You can learn about each of us. Get yourself some Birdland BS gear. Go check out that Shell and Tell podcast. If you're a Maryland fan,
do it.
Go check it
out. Do it now.
It is on the website. And make sure you also check us out through the Big Play association that we have. I'm drawing a blank there. BigPlay.com.
What just happened there?
I don't know.
Did you have a meltdown? I'm pretty sure he had a stroke.
I had a stroke. BigPlay.com, the Big Play Twitter page. Make sure you also check us out on BirdlandSports.com. Appreciate it, Fred. Make sure you follow us on all of our social media sites. You can follow us at BirdlandBS. That's all you can find us on all the social media sites. At FredBLBS, at ScottBLBS, at Bartender_Blake. Make sure you also, while you're there, like, follow, subscribe, and share. Make sure if you want your opinion or topic heard on the show, use the hashtag #ThatsBLBS. As always, tune into the audio version of the podcast, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts. Wherever you listen to your podcast, we are there. Go check it out. Next week, special announcement. We're going to reiterate this later on. We're coming live on Thursday night, not Tuesday night. I will be out of town. Fred will have his birthday on Monday.
Hey-o.
Brian's wife's birthday is on Tuesday. Baby. It is a celebration week, but we're doing it on Thursday.
Celebrate good time. Come on.
If I'm not allowed to sing on the show, neither are you.
Do
stop.
That again.
Nope.
You only get it once.
I'm sorry, guys.
Make sure next Thursday night, 7:30, Facebook, YouTube, wherever you want to tune in, check us out. For Fred, Brian, and myself, we'll see you guys next week.
We're out. See ya.